Hello, everyone. Welcome back to our podcast, Our Two Cents Let's Chat. As always, I'm joined by my wonderful co-host, Vivek. And today
we actually have some guests, Arya Dupatta, Emma Marzullo, and Amelia Tang. And they're all here from the organization Students for DEI Georgia, which kind of leads us into our topic, which is DEI. So I guess we can kind of just start off here. Thank you all for being here. Emma, can you give us, a quick summary or a quick definition of what DEI is?
Yeah, so essentially DEI is diversity.
And it's found in a lot of schools here in Georgia.
Diversity being, there's already a lot of kids who aren't like one another in the classroom. So the staff and environment in the schools should reflect that. Equity being, not every kid learns the same, but they deserve the same shot. You know, you should be able to get an A taking an extra support math class or an AP math class, and you should all be able to achieve what you want in life because you were given an equitable education to get there. And inclusion being, there are so many people who are different in the student body and Forsyth and all the schools in Georgia. So you all feel included. No one feels left out because everyone deserves an education.
Thank you. So now moving on, so for Arya and Amelia, can you two detail your experiences in the school system as people of color and kind of how those experiences prompted you to want to join Students for DEI and kind of fight and become leaders in this organization, in Georgia at least?
Yeah, so for me, I think definitely the lack of representation, I feel, just like with history, there's not like a lot of true facts being stated about like India being colonized and just prominent woman like powerful woman figures in history and not like again being represented as well as just like the microaggressions that I have faced from teachers, from peers. I think I just don't want any other little kid going to school to face that and feeling invalidated.
Yeah, and I mean, I think we've all had our shared experiences with racism and hatred and just kind of some plain bullying at school. And I think if like we can, I know obviously it's a hot topic too about teaching these kind of things, or not even teaching, but implementing these kind of things in like elementary school or whatever. But I think that's a perfect start because that's kind of where you build your foundation about how to be a good person and how to treat people. And so I think if everyone like can learn those things, whether it may be like history lessons or just simply like, hey, don't be racist, don't be sexist, don't be this, because then when they grow up, they won't inflict all of it on other people, whether it's people of color or just anyone different from them.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more with your thought process. So Emma, you are in an organization that is predicated on acknowledging and amplifying the voices of minority groups, in this case, racial, of course. So how big a part do you think allyship, or in this case, white allyship, plays in facilitating the recognition of those marginalized voices?
I think it plays a huge part because
we live in a society where people of color aren't listened to. So if the people that we're working with who are white are able to say, hey, please, have my platform. Please listen to me. I've been discriminated against for the color of their skin. That's of the utmost importance because otherwise, maybe those people wouldn't be listened to as, which of course is wrong, but is just, the honest society that we're living in. So I think it's really just important to amplify the voices of the people who are being discriminated and therefore the people that the DEI plan will help the most.
So Arya, at one of the previous events where you spoke, actually, one of the anti-DEI people claimed that you were indoctrinated simply because you were, speaking in favor of the DEI plan. Do you think that sort of, almost invalidating sentiment, it kind of erases your experience as a person of color in the school system, like we were talking about earlier? Do you think it erases your experience?
Definitely, because Well, first of all, I'm not indoctrinated. I'm really just standing up for what I believe in. And I think that every kid should feel safe in schools and have an equitable education. And if that's indoctrination to them, when I'm up there speaking about my experiences of racism in the school system, then yeah, it kind of does make me feel like my experiences aren't valid. And like, I'm kind of like playing victim, which obviously I'm not, but yeah.
Right.
Yeah, and it's kind of crazy that these are like fully grown adults who are kind of like pushing forth this behavior. It's, I don't know if it's crazy, but it's kind of like, come on, you know what I mean?
It's yeah. crazy.
It's crazy. It's definitely crazy. Especially yeah. they're coming for a 17-year-old. I'm a minor. And they just feel so, what's the word?
Threatened.
Yes, yes.
Yeah.
By a minor.
I guess that gives you some power. So, I mean,
yeah.
Literally, Amelia, so, as said, the anti-DEIers tend to repeatedly claim that we as students, A, are being manipulated, and that the words you spoke at the last Board of Education meeting were fed to you, and B, that we as students haven't experienced enough life to fully speak in favor of this plan. So how does a young person?
I mean, it makes me feel so upset and disappointed and angry because, like I said in my speech last time, you know, we're not blind sheep. And we're all smart enough to like know better, and we don't just repeat things that we're told, whether by parents or teachers. You know, we learn and we take in like information into our own accounts. We think about it. We form our own opinions. We research. We do this and that. We talk with other people, our peers, older, younger, and it's just so upsetting to hear them say that because, you know, we're kind of their age as. The same age as their own children. Would they say that about their own children? Because I don't know. Maybe they would. Maybe they're feeding their children these like crazy things and they're almost like manipulating them or telling them what to believe. But I would be so upset. I mean, I am so upset that they say these things about us because they're right. not true.
Right. And that's a very good point that, you know, they should be in fact they should feel more like they have an obligation to amplify student voices, considering, you know, they have students in the school system. Mm-hmm. So it should definitely be, you know, that they are also in support of us taking control of our well, not control, but you know what, advocating for our own education. And that's another thing that was really crazy is that, you know, we as students are kind of having to take our own education and our want for an unbiased education into our own hands. But anyway, that's just something I think is really crazy. So our next question is that people on the other side, Emma, people on the other side claim that this curriculum, this training, this plan discriminates against majority groups. And namely, what they've been saying is that it discriminates against white children. Do you think this is true at all, Emma?
I really don't think this is true. I think that
I've been oppressed for so long, and they finally
start to get a step towards equality, it can make others being oppressed.
And that's why they're so scared.
So I really don't think this plan demonizes white people.
So another major trend that is kind of prevalent amongst these anti-DEIers is that they want to shove us into a partisan bucket by calling us Marxist or socialist or leftist. Is DEI a partisan organization at all? Any of you guys can take it. All of you guys can answer.
No,
we want equitable education, whether you're a
black communist or you're a white reactionary conservative. We all deserve an education because education is how the country gets better in the first place. So there really isn't partisan. We don't want conservatives to feel against, just like we don't want people on the left to feel like they're being discriminated against.
Mm-hmm. And I also feel like they're just throwing around words that they've heard on Fox News or any other news channel to kind of like scare people in a way. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. I don't think they really understand what Marxism is, neither socialism nor communism. Mm-hmm. I mean, I hear a lot of people talk about, but I can tell you kind of for a fact, because my parents came from communist China. I mean, they're both citizens of the U.S., but like, that's where they're immigrants from there. And like, that's not the case at all. This isn't what it was. They never had something like this back then in the 1960s, 70s, and let alone now or whatever. And it's just, I mean, there's no, we're not Marxists. We're not exactly socialists. We're not any of these like things that they're trying to make us to be.
Right. Well, and I think that's, go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say, I think I'll put our personal views aside. I like to sometimes classify myself as a socialist, but that doesn't mean I want all the kids in public schools to be socialists either. I just want them to have a good education where they can develop critical thinking skills and make their own opinion.
Those opinions are conservative,
that's what it is. I don't really need them to also feel the way I feel. I just want them to have a good education, which is why we can be partisan regardless of our own feelings, but the narrative seems to be that we cannot.
Well, and that's what I was going to say, is that they don't seem to realize that if they would read the plan for this specific county that, you know, this opposition is so strong in, if they would read the plan, they would realize that it doesn't just say we're, as they say, promoting the needs of minority groups. It says we're not discriminating against anyone on the basis of, and it has like at least 30 traits there, and multiple of them are schools of thought, political views, philosophy, theology, religion. So I don't think they seem to realize that by implementing the DEI plan, we're not only protecting the interests of minority groups and, you know, children that think, as they say, far left, we're also protecting the thoughts of, you know, right people, far right people, conservatives, Christians, everybody. Everybody is being protected under this plan.
Right, and what I think is ironic is, like, I remember sitting in the last meeting, and a lot of the time they were throwing around the term, like, oh, these kids are Democrats and they don't know what they're talking about. But what I think is funny is that they associate diversity, inclusion, and equity with Democrats. You know what I mean? That just speaks on what your own, like, your own party's platform. But
Yeah. So I think our final question, and again, this is for all of you. You can all answer if you want. Evidently, the students for DEI movement in Georgia has gained a lot of traction. Do you think that this movement is going to stay relevant for a while, or do you think it's going to eventually dissipate? Like, where do we go from here as students?
Yeah, I mean, they're definitely kind of ruthless, I could say, but I mean, so are we, and I mean, looking at the country as a whole, a lot of states right now, it's the fight has been going on for a while, and specifically in Georgia, too. And I think, you know, I mean, yeah, we're definitely in it for the long haul, and we're trying to keep it as, like, DEI, the DEI plan and everything kind of related to it, like social emotional learning, these kind of great things for students. We're trying to keep it in schools for as long as possible, because that's the goal. And I mean, we're not going to let up until they let up. And even then, we're not going to let up either, because, you know, we're going to keep promoting and advocating and voicing our opinions out for this.
Right.
Yeah, I was just going to say, I think even when the DEI plan continues to is renewed and everything, I think there's still parts that we need to change so that, again, as I said before, just so that everyone has an equitable education, like immigrants especially, POC students, everything. So I do think we're, as Amelia said, in it for the long haul. I think it was Amelia who said that. But yeah, just we're going to be there at every meeting as much as we have to, if the other side's going to be there or not. I think it's important to show the board that this is something that's really important.
Well, I mean, I guess that brings this conversation to a close. Again, thank you guys so much for being here and dedicating some of your time to this podcast. And Vivek and I decide that we are just even like in a small part of this organization, it means so much to us. And we're so proud of you guys for like speaking up at the Board of Education meetings and organizing. And it's just such a cool thing that y'all are doing. So yeah, thank you again.
So we're going to leave the Instagram and Twitter handles for Students for DEI Georgia in our description. Go follow them, check out their content, see how you can get involved, see how you can take control of your own education here in Georgia. And just one last time, thank you all.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay.
So what you just heard was a really cool interview we got to do with Students for DEI here in Georgia. It was our first interview, so I think it went as well as it could have. Once again, thank you to Emma, Amelia, and Aria. You guys were wonderful. And yeah, we can't thank you enough about it. Sorry if the quality of that first portion was a little grainy. We apologize. It is our first time conducting an interview with people over a screen. So yeah, Vivek, do you want to kind of get right into the second portion of this conversation?
Sure. Yeah. What Kirtana said is completely true. It is. It's our first time. We're still kind of navigating these waters. But I think we kind of just want to get on here afterwards and talk about, like, or at least I did. Can you believe how ridiculous this is? Like, I mean, we are high schoolers, and in some people's case, even in middle school, and we're having to like fight for the right to learn unbiased education. Like, what the hell?
I feel like when you put it like that, it does sound a little bit insane, but I feel like over the past several months, I've just gotten accustomed to this concept of like, this is America.
Right.
This is the situation we're in. And I feel like for a lot of, you know, a lot of my childhood when I was in elementary school and middle school, I kind of didn't really notice all of these subtle nuances in how my teachers or my peers were behaving towards me because of who I was, what I looked like, who or what I identified as.
Right.
But I think once this conversation started picking up, especially over the past few months or starting earlier this year in 2021 about critical race theory, CRT, of course, and DEI in schools, I feel like it kind of, again, prompted me to sort of think, oh, like, shit, like, this, you know what I mean? This is something that,
yeah.
How did I miss this?
Right.
And then once I realized, it was like, oh, well, like, this is what it is. This is America. This is, like, students have to get up and start advocating for themselves in Board of Education meetings. And
right.
That's kind of the way of life. But I also have a certain respect for it. I'm almost kind of glad that this conflict came about the way it did, because I feel like it just got more students or young people to kind of realize what the world we're kind of living in, or like what the situation at least here in Georgia is. And I know it's similar, you know, in different states as well. It kind of, I think, at least it allowed me, so I'm assuming that it's allowed other students too, to kind of realize, hey, this is what it's like, and we do have to advocate for ourselves. So I think it also kind of is a reflection of the bigger world stage, because even when we grow and become adults and we're in our 20s, this is kind of the same thing we have to do. We do have to
Right.
ourselves in every walk of life. So I think it was kind of like, it isn't.
Yeah, I guess if you look at it that way, it can always, you could consider it a privilege.
Yeah.
To, you know, kind of have that. This has been like almost a stepping stone of sorts, like you said, into, you know, the world of adulthood, the world of, you know, you have to, you, this is, you know, a cutthroat world, not to be dramatic. You have to kind of fight for yourself, fight for what you need. And I think that it's really actually a privilege. I agree. I just think that, like, and this is not disagreeing with you, so that's what it sounds like, sorry. But, like, this is just so strange for me to see juxtaposed. We have one side of this debate, okay, and that side is made up of students completely. They're talking about real issues, their real experiences, and then you have the other side, who are all these ancient people who some of them have even admitted that they don't have students in the school system. They just don't want their taxpayer dollars going to pay for us learning CRT, which is not what's happening. And so it's kind of interesting to see, as I said earlier, the juxtaposition between this very eloquent group of like students and this kind of like crazy group of opponents to this plan, because they, I mean, they launch ad hominem attacks on all of the students in our organization, in Students for DEI, every day. And then they'll say that we're the ones who are not actually talking about things. We're the ones who are being, you know, manipulated, who don't have any real thing to say. But it's like, no, that's y'all.
Yeah, going back to your earlier point, I was not denying what you were saying. It is completely outrageous. And even when I was at the last board of meeting, it kind of, like you were saying, it almost kind of felt like the other side, or the anti-DI, or so to speak, like, I felt like they didn't even really know what they were standing up for. They were opposing what we were saying. You know what I mean? Like, a lot of their speeches, they were talking about, like, this far-left movement and how we were being governed by some external Marxist body and this and that and that. And I'm like, I feel like a lot of their points were very unfocused. I didn't know. At some point, I was like, what are you talking about? One woman stood up and she talks about how, like, Trump won the election. And I was like, where is this going? This is the board of
What is the point, ma'am?
What is the point? Here, like, there were, you know, 14 to 17 to like 20-year-olds from our side speaking up about their experiences and how we can better the education system, not only, you know, at the state level, but also nationally. And they were kind of bringing up their experiences and talking and kind of, you know, leaving these very smart anecdotes, trying to provoke some sort of, you know, emotion from these people. And they were just like, this far left movement. And
right.
You are attacking students.
It feeds back into that mentality of, it's not that they, and when I say they, I guess we can say this about all humans, we are not, you know, we are reactionary people, we are reactionary human beings, and so it's almost like, not almost like, it is like they don't even know what they're standing up for, to your point. They're just reacting to someone saying, you know, that, you know, we need to acknowledge that there are other cultures, other identities, other, you know, facets of personalities, which is, it feeds into that role of white supremacy in this, because for so long, you know, especially... And so, like, this movement started in Forsyth County, Georgia, right?
Mm-hmm.
In Forsyth County, Georgia, the population is what? Like, I don't know the full numbers. It's a very white county. I would say it's on the border of being rural, in North Georgia. And there are lots of, you know, white people. White people are in the majority. And it seems like they're really being shaken up by the fact that, you know, we have the fastest growing Asian population in the United States. They're really being shaken up by the fact that, you know, it's like they're not on top anymore. So now when we're talking about other people and other minorities and other, like I said earlier, other sexual orientations and gender identities and this and that, it seems like they're reaching for control. They don't want to give that up.
That, and again, I almost, like, yes, that was kind of very blatant that they were kind of, like, in their speeches, again, like I said, I went to the last board of meeting, I watched the recording of the one before that, going to the next one, but in all of their speeches, of course, from the opposing side, or from the anti-DIers, as you said, they kind of appeared to be very threatened, and even that sort of confused me, because the students, or, you know, the kids in the purple shirts, they were rather talking about why we need DEI, but rather why DEI should remain in schools and why revised. And they were talking about, like, in fact, I feel like if anything, they were the ones that were sort of bringing up race in almost this toxic way. Like, no one there was attacking white people. As far as I've seen, at least in the last Board of Education meeting, none of our friends said anything of like, oh, white people did this to me and white people did that to me. No one said that.
Right.
For some reason, the other side seems to think that, like, you know, like that was was brought up, but that was a point they kept reiterating. Right. And I was very confused. I was thoroughly confused why that was, because that wasn't even the argument. This is whether DEI should be kept.
Exactly.
And even we weren't saying that DEI should be kept. If anything, we were advocating for it to be revised.
Right. And to be, you know, kind of made more specific. And that was another point they talked about, how it was like unspecific, which, you know, there were so many points, it's hard to even keep track of them. But like the other thing is that, like you were just saying, the students for DEI people, they were speaking very passively. They were talking about simply why DEI would help them. They weren't saying these anti-DEIers don't have any experience. They're, you know, they're white, so they've never had to face it. They weren't doing any of that. In fact, it seemed like you said, the anti-DEIers were saying that they were, you know, offended by the students saying, you know, saying certain things. Like, I know one of our friends spoke about the bindi, which is, you know, the tiny little dot on Indian people's foreheads.
Shout out to Shivi.
Yeah, shout out to Shivi. But, like, and you could see that everyone in the audience was shaking their head, the anti-DEIers, I mean, shaking their heads. They were confused. They didn't want to listen. And it's like, it's truly just they don't want to know what someone else who's not them thinks.
Yeah, and again, it was like when, you know, those students, for example, like Shivi was expressing her concerns and sharing her experiences, if she was directly, or all of them were directly addressing the board,
right.
None of them were like accusing the members that were sitting there or the other people who gave speeches. They were just saying like the board should be held accountable for the revision of the DEI plan. No one there was saying, oh, these people did this, and these people are saying this, and these people,
right.
You know what I mean? It was, it was very passive, if anything.
Yes.
That I thought it was very cordial. Like, I mean, yeah.
Well, and again, that goes back to them. They were the ones who were saying, you know, turning around and addressing the audience, even though, you know, the board members had made it very clear that this was addressing the board. They were the ones who were turning around and, you know, inciting the crowd. They were the ones who were, you know, disrupting the meeting by clapping when you're not supposed to clap after anyone's speech, you know. So when I look back at all of that, I don't think, you know, any rational human being who's not just blindly sticking to one side, I feel like when they look at that video, they're going to see one side speaking about something, and they're being very calm, very passive, as we've kept saying, as we've mentioned many times. They're, you know, advocating for their own education based on their own stories. And then you can, this theoretical person would see another side that's like viciously attacking everything, rolling their eyes when people bring up their sexual orientations and gender identities. Like, nobody's asking you to quote endorse, you know, different identities. Why does it require so much from them to be respectful?
Yeah, and I would just like to quickly state that by, you know, saying, like, because Vivek and I are saying all this, our intention by no means is to polarize the situation any further.
Oh no,
it's merely an observation. We are not accusing, I mean, you know what I mean, it's not our intention to accuse either side either. I mean, it is, as they say, it is a free country. Everyone is, you know, everyone's opinion is valid, however incorrect it may seem to us. So
yeah. I thought you were gonna say however incorrect it may be, and I was gonna be like, Kirtana, please.
No, however however much we may not agree with it, you know,
right,
it is valid.
Right.
So yeah. And that's not to say that there weren't people there who, you know, were kind of against DEI who weren't polite. In fact, there were certain people who kind of acknowledged the speeches that the people from, you know, Students for DEI kind of gave.
Right.
Of like respectful about it. So it's not to say that they were all, or like one side was this and one side was that. We just feel like there's
more of one type of person on one side than on the other.
Yeah, and it's easy, it's very easy to be kind of respectful and to acknowledge someone's presence rather than kind of hooting and hollering about it, but that's
right.
Yeah, that's kind of like, I think it all goes back to the fact that, like, once again, you as in the royal you, mm-hmm. as who is opposing DEI, and you're getting up there, whether you're a parent or a teacher or an administrator or whatever, and you're opposing this plan against, like, you know what I mean? Against, like, 14, 15, 16, 17, 18-year-olds. Like,
it's... Yeah.
And in such a vicious way.
Oh, yeah.
Kind right. of, like, I don't know. That's kind of what I felt was immature, and almost, it kind of almost created this hostile environment that just made, at least made me feel unsafe.
Right.
So I think that's even, like, why we're having this conversation, is sort of to kind of just, pun intended, to give our two cents and
right.
dissect it. Yeah.
Well, and, like, I mean, I hate to, you know, kind of go back into it, but, like,
no, go ahead.
One lady who spoke against DEI, of course I'm not mentioning names or anything, but one lady who spoke against it is a substitute teacher. I've had her multiple times at Alliance before this meeting, mm-hmm. and she always, you know, acted, you know, super nice, and, you know, I'm a teacher's pet, of course, so, like, you know, she loved me, and she, you know, there were other students that she loved. But now, imagine, she's going to come back into class one day, subbing, and I'm not going to be able to, like, be nice. Well, not be nice. I'll be cordial, but, like, I won't look at her the same way. You know what yeah. I mean? It's because I know that she got up there, and she said that she thinks that exclusionary language is a complete sham. She thinks that diversity doesn't need to be recognized. So it's like, how can I move on from that if I have her as a sub again, you know?
Mm-hmm.
How can I move on from that fact?
Kind of adding to that, after this past Board of Education meeting, we were outside, and I was kind of waiting to get picked up. And we were having what I thought was actually kind of lovely. We were having a kind of sort of almost polite conversation with the anti-DEIers. I know, so mm-hmm. surprised. But, yeah, and we were talking to a couple of people, and this one lady who was, you know, she was very polite, she was respectful, kind of within her own space, whatever, given COVID and all, it was nice to have that conversation with her. But at one point she said something about how she believes in diversity, she believes in inclusion, but what she doesn't believe in is equity. And I almost wanted to laugh, because how do you, like, diversity is not something you believe in, it just yeah. exists, you
ma'am,
know what I mean? That was, but then it's like also going back to this whole, like, I was also, how do you not believe in equity?
Right.
Like, that is just also kind of like.
Well, and that goes back to, like, the fact that they don't actually know what they're saying.
That's exactly what I'm saying. So you say things like you don't believe in equity, but then you're also, like, thoroughly appalled by why we are kind of rejecting the speeches that you've given.
Yeah. Like,
You say you don't believe in equity, and then you are also surprised on why we think the DEI plan should continue to exist. Like,
right. It doesn't make sense.
You kind of answered your own question. They're always just so close to getting it, and then they miss.
Yeah.
And
so close. Like, literally so close.
Yeah.
Oh, these... It's really not... We're not trying to say that we don't like these people, or that, like, we feel a certain, well, we do feel a certain way, but that we don't think these people deserve respect. Fine. If you have an opinion, fine. But be able to explain rationally to me why you support that opinion. Don't just say, I don't support CRT. I don't support SEL, which, by the way, I would just like to make a disclaimer. I will talk about CRT in my example, but, like, that doesn't, DEI is not CRT. But the point is that I'm trying to make is, okay, fine, you don't like CRT, you don't like SEL. First of all, can you even tell me what SEL stands for? And second of all, why? Rationally explain to me why you don't like either of them. Because if you can't do it, then your argument is moot. You don't get to have an argument if you don't have an argument. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Like, that, like, I think that was the most common thread amongst the anti-DEIers, was, like, it was so, like, obvious. It was glaringly obvious that they have not read either of the curriculums or the plans, DEI or CRT, critical race theory, of course. And they were just speaking out of their asses. I mean,
yeah.
Throwing
around buzzwords.
I was like, where is this going? This is not stated in either plan.
Yeah.
In fact, I think more often than not, they were referring to the Communist Manifesto more than they were. Forsyth County. So I was just kind of confused and in shock throughout that whole meeting. I was like, do you even know what you're talking about?
Right.
I don't know.
One thing I did want to talk about, I don't know if you have anything to add, but before we go, is that one speaker I'm thinking of who was a student, and they spoke about how they didn't think it was fair that, you know, their Bible verse posters to be put up, but a poster that was in their words, which I completely and 100% wholeheartedly disagree with, were quote quote promoting homosexuality were able to be put up. Okay, let's just make this very clear. First of all, it's not a choice to be gay. It's a choice to be Christian. Second of all,
I don't think we need to be disputing that because religion is a sensitive subject, but I know I interrupted you, but what I would like to quickly interject there is I think the student you were talking about was mentioning how I think the organization is called FCA, I believe.
Yes.
Fellowship Christian Association.
Fellowship of Christian Athletes.
Oh, I'm so sorry. Yes, why? Whatever I said, FCA. I think her posters were kind of taken down out of her school, but at the same time, the Gay Straight Alliance posters were kept up.
Mm-hmm.
But I would just like to say that throughout the time that I've been a student, I have kind of gone up to the head of whatever school it was in, whether it was in middle school or whether it's now in high school, and I've, you know, advocated for a prayer room, and that's always been denied. Mm. They say that religion tends to not have much of a place or sort of a mantle at school. Like, mm-hmm. Of course, share your beliefs and, you know, whatever, right. Who you are. But I feel like, again, it's sort of to say that, like, as a Hindu, even if I went up and if I went to my principal or my superintendent or my counselor even, and I was like, hey, can I put up this thing can I put up these posters all around school that has, like, verses from the Bhagavad Gita? I feel like mm-hmm. that would be rejected, too.
Exactly. So I'm sorry.
More so just that it's so nuanced, and maybe that shouldn't be brought into school. And I think that's just what, you know.
Sorry if it came across like this, but I wasn't trying to make it seem like, you know, the Bible verse posters are, you know, awful or untrue or anything. It was simply the fact that this speaker thought it was so unfair that the religious posters could not go up, but the ones that acknowledge that people have different sexual identities could not go up. And I think that's, like, one of the things that you know, very common is those sort of false equivalencies.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah.
Between, like, you know, her talking about how a picture of a successful black woman in this country, our vice president, Kamala Harris, went up and she wasn't allowed to put up Bible verse posters. Well, I was like, by doing that, they're not endorsing Kamala Harris's policies. They're talking about how she's a successful woman of color. There's a difference. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah.
I think that's just like a greater reflection again on sort of the foundation of the anti-DEIers is
mm-hmm.
they tend to sort of compare apples and oranges a lot.
Yeah.
And I mean, I get it. It sometimes may be a little unclear to see those differences, but they, you know, like, I mean, if we really want to come down to it, I almost feel like this is a fight that is so simple,
mm-hmm.
but people have sort of made it into something that it's completely not, and now
we're in a
whole other realm.
Right.
And that's when all these little sort of petty comparisons get made, and then, you know, and that just kind of speaks for itself, and that's why we are where we are.
With
this, I think. Yeah.
Right. I guess the message that we would, you know, have y'all take away, if we could, is that one, if you're going to speak on something, know what you're speaking about. Read the plan before you speak on it. Read the tenets of CRT, which, by the way, is a law school thing, if you're going to speak on it. Two, be respectful. It's not that hard. You just have to nod your head and try to listen to what this person is saying, because even if they have, and this goes for all people, even if they have a different viewpoint than you, you should listen to it, because you may find something you agree with them on, and then you have common ground that you can, you know, engage in, like, fruitful discussion on. And three, just be kind. Be kind. I'm so cheesy anyway.
No, I second that.
You're laughing at me. I get it. I'm laughable.
I second all of that. We try to be as nonpartisan as possible on this podcast. Though, of course, like, you know, we can't help our inherent biases, but we hope that doesn't come across too strongly on whatever conversation we have.
Right.
Regardless of the episode. But one last thing I would just like to say, please go check out Students for DEI. Their Instagram account will once again be in this episode description. And, mm-hmm. I mean, all of their social media will be. Yeah, make sure you guys go follow them, check them out, see how you can get involved in your respective county in Georgia. I think they even have plans to sort of like expand, so mm-hmm. for that. Yeah, thank you for listening.
Thanks. Brought to you by Deekshu Devrasetty for editing, Vanshika Khatwani and Jasmine White for graphics, Puneet Bajwa and Sanj Faryani for socials, and to my wonderful co-host Kirtana for putting up with me.